Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. So I've been recording these episodes a few weeks in advance, at least, as I'm trying to get ahead and make sure that I have enough so that if something happens one week, I don't get cut out. And because of that, I know that what you are listening to is not always up to date with what's going on out in the world. And these episodes are meant to be evergreen and rarely focus on very current events. That's what my bonus episodes on Patreon are for. On the other hand, though, today, as I'm thinking about this episode and thinking about our current political and economic climate, I am appalled at many of the actions, if not all of the actions, that the Trump presidency has taken thus far. And I don't look forward to the next 4 years. And it leads sort of nicely into this question, which is, who is to blame for Collapse? We've kind of, these last several episodes, we've been doing this, going through maybe frequently asked questions, the type of questions that one gets asked or that I get asked when talking about Collapse. And this is an interesting one for many different reasons. Maybe the answer is me, because of this, you know, I chose to generate an AI image. I apologize for that. We'll move on. But there are some things to consider here. Does it matter? In the end, whose fault it is that society will collapse? And by the way, these are not questions that I am trying to give any sort of specific answer to on this page here. These are things to think about, for you to think about. I have my feelings on them, but the purpose of this episode today is not just to talk about my feelings. What blame do I personally have in all of this? Is it my place to judge someone else based on their consumption habits? What difference can a single person make? Is it too late to care? And when I say care, I mean care about whose fault it is, about who we should blame, or if we should place blame at all. And then, is guilt or shame helpful? So, yeah, these are some things I've been pondering, and they're questions and It always comes up, right? And I see this in conversations about Collapse in other places, online, forums, videos, wherever Collapse is talked about. There's always sort of this lingering question of like, well, are we all complicit? Am I complicit in Collapse? Am I the reason that we're collapsing, right? Because I consume, I live just by living. I consume, and together as a human species, we consume above that which is sustainable. Sometimes it feels like this question is asked, especially by those who may be in the early stages of grief. There may not yet be acceptance of the situation, and this is, you know, a way to lash out in anger or denial to say, okay, maybe this is happening, but who should we blame for it? Whose head needs to roll? But that said, I have made a list here of several different, not individuals, but areas of blame, the reasons behind why we're collapsing. And so we can look through those and see. Obviously, this is a complicated web, and the actual, you know, you could say that we're in collapse now, but we haven't yet collapsed, and what it will be that may push us over the edge and be that, you know, that real driving force behind collapse in the end may influence who is at fault. Though the most likely answer is that it is all of the above, right? Everything that we're about to talk about. So in no particular order, let's start here with the wealthy elite and corporations, corporate greed and short-term profit. So fossil fuel companies knowingly suppressed and suppress climate science it is well known that Exxon in what, like the, since the 70s have known about climate change. They've done their own research, their own studies, and they actively work to suppress that information. Planned obsolescence and mass consumerism drive resource depletion, right? As our population increases, these corporations and the wealthy elite that run them purposefully destroy products or make products weak so that they have to be repurchased, right? And there's that story about way back when Kellen and I did our episode on, I can't remember what the title of the episode was, but we talked about planned obsolescence. And Kellen mentioned, you know, when the light bulb was first invented, it could last, I can't remember how many years, tons and tons of years. And they basically colluded and said, look, we have to make the light bulb last less time. We can't use this technology that we have to keep them lasting forever because people will stop buying light bulbs. They won't need to buy them as often. And so it's kind of an early example of planned obsolescence, but we see it all around us and it drives mass consumerism. Of course, there's much more behind consumerism, but that is one example that I thought to share. Wealth hoarding increases global inequality. So as the wage gap and the wealth gap continue to increase, I think I saw something the other day that said billionaires are making up to $100 million per day. Per day. That is insanity. Corporate lobbying prevents meaningful climate and economic reform. It's essentially just legal corruption. Just because something is legal doesn't make it right, doesn't make it moral. It is legal to lobby in the U.S., essentially to pay someone lots of money or in other ways, essentially threaten them by, you know, with withholding money in Congress or wherever to drive your desires to get what you want from laws. And corporations and the wealthy elite do this constantly. We're seeing that more than ever in our current administration here in the U.S. It's an oligarchy. It is men who have purchased their way into positions of power with their money and also with the assets that they hold, like social media platforms, which gives them position to leverage these positions of power. Corporations have as many rights or more than humans. Corporations are people, they say, right? Corporations should have the same legal standing as people. And those rights that corporations have or are given often make them untouchable. And the people behind them, the actual people behind them who are causing all the problems, even more untouchable. All right. Governments and political leaders. So short-term political cycles discourage long-term planning. This is not me advocating for longer term cycle. This is not me saying that, you know, the current president or any president should be able to run for more than two terms or that terms should be longer. It's more to say that when you're in a two-party system and you have these four-year cycles or four-year terms, it's just constantly flipping back and forth. Things are being done and undone. And that long-term plan, or that causes a lack of long-term planning. It's all short-term planning. How can I get what I need now as a politician to stay relevant, to stay in power, to get my party what it needs or enrich myself or whatever that might be, without actually thinking about the long-term well-being of the nation or of the world? Geopolitical conflicts over resources exacerbate global instability. You know, most, if not all, I'm not an expert on history and wars, but I think that most wars revolve around resources and the ability to have constant access to resources. That's why some of the, you know, maybe seemingly weird places of the world are, and by weird, I just mean like they're not what you would consider like a global powerhouse or a super strong government, but yet the wars are fought there or over that territory because of the resources that lie within that territory. And of course, that does cause an exacerbation of instability globally from both a political standpoint, but also from the standpoint of our supply chains, resource management, all of the above. Governments prioritize economic growth over sustainability. Once again, every nation is looking out for itself. Governments are selfish, and they look at their own economic growth, you know, the short-term, again, well-being of their own people and of their own pocketbooks. And so sustainability is afterthought, if it's thought of at all. And in our current environment, again, in the U.S., sustainability is not even in the equation. It's not even pretended to be cared about. As a matter of fact, it is openly disdained. Failure to regulate corporate power and environmental destruction. So again, because of that short-sightedness that governments and our political leaders have, because of that corruption and self-serving attitude, there is not enough regulation around corporations and around the destruction that happens to the environment. I don't mean to keep harping on this, but this is where we're at. In the U.S. right now, we're actively seeing regulations against environmental destruction being eradicated, right? The limited and, you know, not, it was already not good enough, our regulations around environmental destruction, and it's becoming more and more even non-existent. All right, the military-industrial complex. Arms manufacturers benefit from continuous wars. So we just talked about wars and how governments have this incentive to continue to fight over resources to enrich themselves through war. Arm manufacturers also, those who are lining their pockets with money made from building weapons, right, and selling contracts to the government. This is an area that is full of corruption. And Kellen and I have talked about the military-industrial complex previously on an episode. This one, I think even just this part of it, the arms manufacturers, the companies that are selling weapons to governments, this could have an entire episode all on its own, and maybe at some point it will. But this idea, essentially, that this corruption, the behind closed doors deals that happen between senators and governors and whoever that incentivize for the continuation of wars and the profit that comes from it. Military conflicts lead to resource destruction and refugee crises. No doubt we are seeing right now horrific things in the Middle East, from Syria, right, to the Gaza Strip. All over, there is suffering happening as people are losing their homes, losing their families, their livelihoods, their economies, everything that they know, because of wars that they really have no part in. They should have no part in. We have recently seen, again, in my time, 2 weeks ago from when you were listening to this, this return to Gaza from many who were moved to quote-unquote safer areas during the Israeli campaign. And so many of them are returning to nothing, right? They are making this trek back home and finding that their homes are destroyed, family members are gone, and they really have nothing to return to. Massive environmental impact of militaries. Again, in the previous episode, we talked about the details of this, how much not just money, but resources are spent on militaries, along with the environmental impact that they cause. Cyber warfare and surveillance erode freedoms. So as technology increases, and this will be a separate slide, you'll notice that there's some overlapping of many of these slides. But on this one, the military has capabilities before citizens have them, right? You always know when something comes out to the public, it's been involved in the military for years, probably decades by that time. And so cyber warfare, surveillance, the types of things that the military has access to and that they are utilizing and researching and developing are far beyond what we know and what we have. And it is detrimental to our freedom. You look at guys like Snowden, right? And what happens when they whistleblow about the way that our freedoms are being infringed upon or destroyed by our government. Okay, big tech. So this one, technological explosion and the risks of unchecked AI and automation. Technology has driven population explosion and resource usage over time. If you look back at a population chart and, you know, when does it start to become a hockey stick? And population is not really even just a hockey stick. It's more like a straight line, right? There's kind of this slow, steady increase. And then all of a sudden, it doesn't curve upward. It just shoots upward. And this happens around the time of the discovery of oil. The ability to use fossil fuels has made a monumental impact on population and therefore the amount of resources that we use. Over-reliance on fragile digital and other technical infrastructure. So yes, technology has caused us to have this reliance. We went over this quite a bit in the last few episodes. AI-driven surveillance and manipulation of public opinion. So to me, when you can no longer trust what you see or hear, that's the manipulation of public opinion piece. It destroys your ability to know what truth is, what's actually happening. We're luckily not yet to the point where all of our news is muddled enough by AI. We still have a basic source of knowledge and truth. It's not too hard to know what's going on from a basic level, but I do see a day where it will all be lies. There will be very difficult to even understand a basic ability to understand what's happening in the world. Same thing with surveillance. Again, it's a dystopia, you know, right? You're driving to this subjugation of people through the ability to mass surveil them. Job loss due to automation without social safety nets. So the economy becomes more and more fragile. People's livelihoods come into question as you create more automation and governments take away social safety nets. And then lastly here, the push for technological progress, and the progress here we put in quotes, without considering societal impact. Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, two of the most wealthy men in the world, who also happen to currently be two men who are partly running things in Washington, right? They are considered long-termists. Did an episode on that just a few ago. They're accelerationists. Their whole thing is to just drive technology forward at the absolute most rapid pace possible. And they believe that this is the right thing to do for some reason. And there is no consideration really for short-term societal impacts or really long-term societal impacts. It's just simply, how can I, number one, make the most money possible? And how can we advance the human species and get to the stars at whatever cost? All right. So far in the question of who to blame, we've gone through a couple of these, right? The wealthy elite and corporations, governments and political leaders, the military industrial complex, and big tech. There's a few more here. Economic and capitalist systems. Capitalism depends on infinite growth on a finite planet. We've heard that phrase before a million times. It doesn't become less true the more times we say it. This one is interesting because it's not more so much of a who to blame, but a what to blame. And in this case, capitalism, I think, has a hefty amount of the blame to be put on its shoulders. Extractive industries deplete natural resources faster than they can regenerate. So again, just a complete disregard of sustainability in the name of profit. Financial systems prioritize short-term profit over stability. This is what we talked about a few episodes ago, why collapse is inevitable. It's that growth imperative, right? And extreme inequality breeds social unrest. Multiple times throughout this episode now, we've already spoken about the wealth gap. We've talked about refugees. We've talked about different ways that tech separates people through surveillance and all of that. This type of inequality breeds social unrest. And dictators love social unrest. They want so bad to be able to clamp down on people and have an excuse to do it. They want to be able to scapegoat a side or a person or a race or a gender or whatever it may be. And social unrest gives them the option to do that with plausible deniability. Historical and systemic factors. Past civilizations, ones that we've gone over before, fell due to resource depletion, inequality, and political instability. This is kind of harkens back to that idea that we're going to collapse because societies collapse. It's what they do. Human psychology favors short-term thinking over long-term survival. I want to stop for a minute on this one because this will take us and link to the next slide. But I think about this a lot. And the question that comes up for me is there a world in which humans collectively can make a choice to create a sustainable world, even as, you know, populations grow and technology advances? It feels like it is completely against our nature, against our psychology. We are short-term thinkers generally. Not always, not specifically, but generally. I recently read a book. I just finished it. It's by Blake Crouch. It's called Dark Matter. Maybe you've read it. Really interesting book. I gobbled it up. I read it in like 4 days. I loved it. There's also a series out on Apple TV that I have not seen. But it's essentially around this idea in quantum mechanics, right? Schrodinger's cat. This idea that there are an infinite number of worlds, this multiverse, and each one is based on the different choices that each person could make, right? That everything that we do changes the future, right? Changes our future, could change others' futures. And there's an infinite number of those deviations, of those different worlds that would be the outcome of each individual choice that we make. I have struggled for a long time to really understand quantum mechanics and the ideas behind it. This book explained things in a way that kind of made it stand out to me. But the reason I bring that up is because as I was reading that book, I was wondering, you know, is there a world in which all of the pieces fell in place and the people worked together and voted together and the right systems were put into place that allowed for a continual, long-term, sustainable world? And while, yes, if you're talking about an infinite number of possibilities, then of course that would happen. But in how many, in how many of those worlds do we make that choice? How against human psychology is it to create that world over the long term? And I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but it feels like a very big uphill battle. Colonialism and imperialism created lasting global instability, and industrial civilization has scaled problems now to a global level. So this just all harkens back to the systemic factors, the systemic issues that we face because of the way that we have chosen to build up our systems, to build up our economic situations, right? It's not an individual thing. We were born into this. It was a system that we have inherited and that we perpetuate. And that drives us to this last piece, which is the general population. Subtitle here is complacency and consumer culture. Widespread overconsumption and wastefulness, failure to hold governments and corporations accountable, preference for convenience over sustainability, and apathy towards systemic change and societal responsibility. I think it is easy and correct and right to place blame for our situation on all of the factors that we have spoken up until now. Corporations, the wealthy, the military complex, governments, politicians, technology, all of those things. Back to the questions I asked at the beginning, though, how much blame does the individual hold, or do we all currently hold as a collective? We consume a lot, and it is unsustainable. We do not hold our governments accountable. We do not hold corporations accountable. We do prefer convenience over sustainability. How many of us would give up the convenience that we have for sustainability? And how many of us do it, right? And of course, again, that leads to the question of, do I, as an individual, do I sacrifice my own convenience in an effort to increase sustainability and just hope that all 7 billion other people, or I guess 8 billion now other people in the world, do it as well? apathy towards systemic change and societal responsibility. How many people actually are talking about this or thinking about it? We know that, you know, environmentalism and this idea to be green and be sustainable, it is something that there's like a kind of a subculture of that people talk about. But how real are those people talking about and thinking about it? You know, someone can have a, you know, be serious about their recycling and they sort out their recycling and they make sure that everything that they can recycle, they recycle. Does it matter? Does it make a change? You know, we've done episodes on sustainability through recycling and how, frankly and sadly, ridiculous of a notion or of a reality our recycling systems are. If every single person in the world recycled, what would that do anything to change our situation, right? I don't ask these questions to say that I have a perfect answer to each of them. It's something I struggle with every day, right? If we took the top 10% of perpetrators of consumerism in the world, would that fix everything? Would it be enough to turn the tide? Would we be sustainable? Obviously, just like the wealth gap, the top 10% likely consumes more than the 90% combined. I don't have the numbers to back that up. It's something, you know, to do some research on and consider. But my guess is, you know, the Pareto principle applies here. And then the next question would be, you know, am I or are you in that top 10%? And what does that mean? In the end, as we move through the stages of grief and land upon acceptance, I think the natural next question is, what comes next? What types of societies could have worked? You know, in that Blake Crouch dark matter quantum mechanics situation where maybe we could pick through the worlds, through the different possibilities, and find that world in which we everything aligned and we chose a sustainable way of life. What does it look like? My next episode, I want to take a look at some of these. I am not saying that these are answers to collapse, but what if one or some or many or all of these different options popped up after collapse or as we move into collapse? So things like degrowth economy and steady state economics, eco-communalism, bioregionalism, permaculture-based societies, resource-based economies, indigenous knowledge and life ways, high-tech and low-impact societies, so the idea of solarpunk, anarchist and mutualist societies, and then post-collapse survivalist networks. So next week, I plan to dive into each of these a little bit deeper, give an introduction into them, and explore this idea of, hey, what can I do to work towards maybe building one of these or preparing myself for one of these or preparing my children or preparing others, the world, for these types of ideas? And which ones might work? Would any of them work? And which one would I prefer to explore? I don't put a lot of time into this currently, but it is fun to think about. It's a fun thought experiment to think, if things worked better, what might that look like? And then how can I apply that on a very small scale to my own life, to the way that I function, and maybe impress upon others around me to live more in these ways as well. All right. Thanks for listening. Appreciate you being here today. Join me on Patreon. That is where we talk about current events. I've been talking about recently, just in the last week or so, the inauguration and everything that's happening with Donald Trump. But we also talk about news articles. We'll hit on natural disasters and things that are going on, how those things are collapse related. And we just have a lot of fun and get a little more personal in those episodes. All right. Thanks a lot. We will talk to you later. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.